Mr. Rich Eisen.
Yes, it is. Rich Eisen here, sitting at the Rich Eisen show desk. Why not, indeed? Because it's the name of the show, and I'm sitting in front of a microphone. Otherwise, you know, what are we doing otherwise? 844-204-RICH is the number to dial right here on the program. Top of hour number two. We just had a full conversation with Rob Domofsky about the Green Bay Packers offseason workout program that is up and running. We also just discussed at length Jalen Hurts' remarkable contract that he just earned every single penny, along with the first no-trade clause in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles. He just got it all. And it was a full-on conversation we'd love to have with you. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial on the program. Jeff Van Gundy of ESPN is slated to call in any moment now, and we'll get to him when he rings us up. And then there is hour number three, Francisco Lindor of the New York Mets joining us on this program. What a weekend you had. Sixers, Clippers, and Mets all winning.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And you, Chris, it's amazing. The Celtics just smoked the Atlanta Hawks, and the Red Sox got back to 500. That's good. So, what? What? What are you shaking your head for? They got back to 500. That's great. I don't understand why that's a problem. Why are you staring at me like that?
Do we need to play back the tape on how you said it?
I said it was great. They smoked your Celtics, smoked the Hawks.
Yeah, very kind of.
I didn't even mention the Bruins getting ready to start winning the cup that everyone's expecting them to bring back to Boston.
Keep counting the standings in April, buddy.
Chris, you can't come. You can't. I mean, honestly,
you're not being nice.
I am.
You're not being nice.
Getting back to
everyone in the room knows it. Everyone listening at home and on television knows.
You can't get to 600 until you get to 500.
Getting back to 500.
You're not sincere. You don't mean it. And I take umbrage.
You got back to 500, by the way, which is you don't want to be like what the A's are right now or the Royals are right now. You want to be certainly if you're getting swept by a team that's difficult to beat right now.
Yeah. Would you rather be 250 or 500?
I didn't like the tone.
Although last year he did tell you that to keep counting the standings, and then what happened at the end of last year? Your team did win 99 games.
So very sensitive.
Did they win a ring? I missed that part.
They did not.
Got it.
Yeah.
So let's take a couple phone calls right here. Oh, by the way, some news breaking in the National Football League draft world. Nick Caserio.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Of the Houston Texans, the general manager. It was just last week at this time that Adam Schefter said, I'm not sold on the Texans taking a quarterback. We're like, what? Really? Really? You'll just pass on Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud sitting up there, too. Is that what you'll do?
That seems silly.
Don't forget, they have a nice backstop at 12. So if somebody like Richardson or Levis or even Hendon Hooker is there, they might be like, we'll take him. We'll be good. We'll take Will Anderson there. We'll trade out, which is what Nick Caserio just said that the Texans are willing to do. The quote I have right here from Andrew Siciliano, if you want to quote me, are we open for business? We're open to listening. It's a very Fraser Crane type way of putting it.
All right.
Yeah.
So who's moving up now?
I mean, Arizona's got to be like, really? Really? We thought we're the linchpin spot at the quarterback position in this draft. After quarterback starts our draft, and we don't need one because Kyler Murray is untradeable right now, even if we wanted to, contract and health-wise. He's our guy. Come on. And the Texans are like, we'll take all those offers. We saw what the Bears just got from Carolina. We'll take them. We'll take them if somebody thinks that Stroud is worthy of their team, and we, even though we don't, I don't even know. Here's the thing with this whole Texans conversation is I don't know what their plan would be. What would their plan be at quarterback? What would it be?
I mean, start Davis Mills and try to go 2-15 again.
Sign Lamar to an offer sheet. Blow everyone away.
Could you imagine?
Which makes no sense.
That's literally the last place I would expect.
That would be that. It would make no sense. That would be their plan with a draft choice at 2-12 and then another draft choice from Cleveland in next year's draft. And this whole business of next year's draft has a bunch of quarterbacks that are better than the ones that are currently available in this year's draft. I will hear that from kingdom to come. And my response is, well, you better make sure you're in the top two of next year's draft, because if there is a quarterback needy team that's anywhere in that area, they ain't trading it. I don't know. This makes no sense, other than the fact that maybe he gets a Godfather offer, multiple draft choices this year, next. I don't know who would do that for C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. Maybe it's a trade that you can make right now, and if the quarterback that's chosen by the Carolina leaves whoever else on the table that is of interest to somebody else, they can just pop that trade out and exact it on the night of the draft. So that is really a shocker to me that Caserio comes out and he goes, yeah, well, we'd be willing to pass up on a quarterback in the draft. That would be heck of a shocker in day one, night one, 10 days from now, as the NFL draft is right around the corner. Fresh off of calling the Lakers win over the Grizzlies is our friend Jeff Van Gundy back here on the Rich Eisen Show, talking some wild playoff games and weekend number one. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing better for talking to you. Your two cents on that Laker win and how sustainable you think the play of Reeves and Hachimura can be for a team that, as we all know, has LeBron and AD on it. What do you got for me on that, Jeff?
Well, I don't know about Hachimura, but I think Reeves for sure. I don't think he'll score necessarily like that, but he plays good basketball on a nightly basis because he competes hard. He knows when to pass and when to shoot. He's a gifted playmaker, and he's got an edge to him. And Hachimura's got a size and strength advantage over the bench of Memphis. Memphis's front court is depleted by injury, and I think it showed the way the Lakers just attacked them in the paint.
And the way that Morant obviously is hurt and him calling himself doubtful for game two, you mentioned the banged up front court. Steven Adams leaps to mind right there. The general consensus going into this series was the Lakers had a shot. Now the general consensus is that the Lakers are going to win. Give me the case for Memphis to push back on that right now, Jeff.
Well, over the past couple of years, Memphis has won at a high rate, very high rate, when Morant hasn't played because of the great backup point guard play of Tyus Jones. So I don't think an injury in the backcourt to Morant is as devastating as the injuries to their front court with Adams and Clark out. So I think they'll be fine on offense, and I think they'll have to get some good minutes out of Roddy or Contour, whoever they choose to play. But the hardest thing for them is going to be, you know, what do we do with Davis and how he just dominated at both ends? And I think they have to attack him with more intelligence, not challenging him one-on-one. I think they've got to search Jaren Jackson out in the post against James and whoever the backups are. I thought that they had some good success there. And then Desmond Bane and Brooks are going to have to play well. I think Bane's really, really good. Brooks is erratic on offense. And they're depleted right now, but they're not without talent. They could certainly win game two if they play well.
Jeff Van Gundy here from the worldwide leader in sports and ABC. As we have begun the NBA playoffs here in the 2022-2023 season. And then coming off of that game with Anthony Davis drawing a charge on Morant and Morant hurting himself on that play. Later on in the day, Giannis gets hurt as Kevin Love draws a block, not a charge. And I know you're not on the old Twitter machine, Jeff, but there is a full-on conversation going on about how maybe for player safety in this day and age with faster players, bigger players, you know, Wembanyama is coming to get rid of the charge in basketball. What are your two cents and thoughts on that one, Jeff?
Well, obviously, you know, the injury situation is you know, hard for all those teams to absorb. And I think going back to like a Derrick Rose situation when he used to attack with reckless abandon with that athleticism similar to Morant's, you know, you can see some more challenging falls. I don't know about eliminating the charge. I think the NBA, far greater than the college game, calls more blocks than charges, which I think is a good thing. But eliminating, I don't know then how you would help if you would just, everything had to be a block shot. I think Mark Cuban recommends that we extend the restricted area out another foot. I think that's fine too. So I think you have to have some, certainly you have to have some, you have to have thoughts, but it's also on the player, the offensive player attacking, to be under control and to be able to avoid the contact by sliding by. So I think it's an interesting topic, and I don't think the solution will be easy.
Well, I mean, not to add any more on the flagrant foul table, because that the way sometimes we stop a game to check on whether it's a flagrant this or a take foul that, and we're stopping games for heading over to a table and we're putting on headsets and we're looking at video. But maybe if a player slides in too late, that could be considered a dangerous play, and it would give a player a second thought to do that. What do you think about that idea, Jeff?
I think certainly you could do that. Again, you know, the trade-off is always more dead time for the fan. But certainly there are dangerous plays, and similar to that is the block out where the guy has already gone up to rebound and a guy sort of undercuts him to try to block him out once he's already in the air. I think that is a similar type of play that can obviously lead to dangerous falls. I think all of that is up in the air, and you just have to think of the unintended consequences as you try to, you know, make the game safer for the players.
Jeff Van Gundy here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk about the Suns losing to the Clippers. How concerned would you be as a Phoenix Suns fan right now? I know they're stacked, but the Clippers seem to be deeper, and they used that depth along with some timely defense from Russ last night to come up with the W. I don't know how much of that game you got to see coming off of your broadcast, but I'll give you the floor on that subject if you don't mind, Jeff.
Yeah, I didn't see the end, but obviously Phoenix doesn't know its team as well as the Clippers know its team. So played Durant and Booker huge minutes. I think Chris Paul's got to, you know, obviously orchestrate, you know, the attack exceptionally well. The bench play of Phoenix, you see Monty Williams going to a lot of different people for short minutes. It'll be interesting to see if he consolidates those minutes into two or three guys versus a few minutes for a lot of different players. But yeah, I think if you're Phoenix, you should be concerned. Kawhi Leonard, every game he actually plays, you're reminded just how good he is. And they have talent. They have good depth, and it's going to be, you know, that series is going to be a hard-fought series.
How deep a run do you think the Kings can make, Jeff?
Well, I'm still picking the Warriors to win that series.
Okay.
But I think the Kings are a dynamic team. I think Sabonis has to make, you know, has to play better. Certainly Monk was an incredible pickup from a bench offensive production standpoint. And I think Fox is in, I think it's year six. And, you know, he's finally getting a taste of playing winning basketball. And I think some of these young players who come into these downtrodden franchises who lose at such significant rates early in their career, they can become numb to the losing, the bad habits that they're acquiring. And I think it's imperative that even when you're losing, that you're playing winning basketball, meaning that you're doing the things right. And I think Mike Brown and his staff have done a tremendous job. They've got an offensive juggernaut. Defensively, you know, they're not very good, but their offense is elite, and they didn't even get a good game from Sabonis. So it's going to be fun watching that series. Two different but high firepower teams. I would expect that Golden State would bounce back and play well, but Sacramento at home, I think they're going to play another good game.
Well, I mean, if you think the Warriors advance, and let's just say that the Lakers do what they just did and can sustain it, certainly with Morant out, I mean, Golden State versus the Lakers in a second-round series would just be quite something. Boston and Philadelphia as well. And then again, I'll just – again, I know it's just one game. But Knicks Heat, we all know, Jeff, that's got some history. You know what I mean?
Oh,
for playoff series?
We are skipping some steps here, Rich.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would say –
Yada, 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 the rest of the first round.
Yeah, because you know, Greg Popovich coined that phrase, you can't skip steps.
Yeah.
So I know he's not a big sports radio guy, but if he happens to be listening right now, he's a little bit angered at Rich Eisen for how many – different steps he skipped along the way to his dream matchup.
He's throwing his screaming eagle at the radio, his big old red wine. He's throwing it at the radio.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
No, I know I skipped a bunch of steps, but I mean, what I just said is kind of possible, though, don't you think? For this,
I'm not sure about the Knicks Heat matchup,
okay.
But certainly the Lakers and the Warriors. I mean, it's possible. And it would be intriguing, and it would be great television. But I never discount these young teams' ability to bounce back, find ways. And, you know, the way the Memphis – I thought both of those series, Memphis and the Lakers, Sacramento and the Warriors, were sort of toss-up series anyway. And so it'll be interesting to see game to game. You know, can Memphis, you know, with – losing game one and the pressure of trying to win game two, maybe down Morant and down those other front court guys, does it kick them into a higher level of effort and intensity and passion?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they a little bit defeated because of the untimely injuries? I can't wait to see their response.
Well, in the couple minutes I have left here with you, Jeff Van Gundy, let's do story time since Greg Popovich is finally going to the Hall. It's one of those where you're kind of shocked that he's not already there. And, you know, basketball is obviously a sport where active coaches can get put in the Hall. You got your favorite Greg Popovich story? You got a good Pop story for me, Jeff Van Gundy?
I don't know if I have a story from the NBA days, but I got to say, I worked with him on the World Cup and the Olympics. I was like a help in scouting,
mm-hmm.
but I was there every day to watch him.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, he was so invested and he's so good with the players. He has the ability to push, prod, but also establish these deep bonds of trust. And I really admired him just watching how he worked in a very, very challenging situation.
Yeah, I'm sure because, again, those are the all-star teams of all-star teams in many ways. And with a lot of jockeying, I imagine, that he was able to – you watched him negotiate that firsthand?
Yeah, I think it just – you know, even when you haven't coached a guy, you know, and you sort of know him from competition.
Yes.
It doesn't mean you're going to instantly, you know, form a bond necessary for a team in moments of stress to be able to have that trust that you need to carry you home. And I just watched how diligent he was at establishing those winning type relationships when it's not easy and it's done in a very short amount of time. I think a lot of it stems from the respect he's garnered from the players for how a good a coach he is, but mm-hmm. also I think he's garnered rightfully the idea that he cares deeply about his players and their success. And it was really fun to watch him work up close.
All right, Jeff, thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it. What's next on your docket? Where do you go from here?
We will our crew is going to be in New York for games 3 and 4 of the Knicks and Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, gosh. That place, man. The Garden for a playoff game. That is just I'm sure the memories will be rushing back for you when you're in that building for that.
It's always a great place to go to in the playoffs. And just like, you know, there's so many great buildings in the playoffs. The thing I always appreciated about the Garden, mm-hmm. It was the same when they were playing in the regular season, a last place team as it was against, you know, a Chicago Bulls team in the regular season. That fan base was there every night. And if you played bad, they let you know. And if you played well, they let you know that too. I appreciated the crowd's honesty for the play that was presented.
I love that. Great way to put it. And then, of course, you always know you're going to get the opposition's best game too. It really is. You just
knew it. Depending on how long their stay in New York was, I think that part was a little bit overrated. I saw some teams that made it to shoot around approximately the same time they came in from the previous evening. So it wasn't like you always got their best. I think Miami's always had that advantage down in South Beach as well.
Straight from I guess the club to the arena. Is that what you're saying?
I tell you what, when teams played back to back in New York,
yeah,
those were the games that you really worried about because they weren't out the night before. Yeah.
There you go. That's information I did not have. Thanks for making me smarter, Jeff. Really, always appreciate the calls. Always,
thank you.
Take care. That's Jeff Van Gundy, an analyst throughout the NBA playoffs. Coverage through the conference finals and the NBA finals on ABC. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. I don't know, man. Always seem like somebody. I mean, Trae Young's the latest example. You know? Coming in. Guys always come in the Garden.
Yep. Some guys, you know, rise up and meet that moment of playing in
rise
a place like
fire.
That.
Fire. Let's take a break. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. When we come back here on this show, the Jalen Hurts contract and what it means for the rest of the league. That's a fascinating conversation we will have next. This is the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Let's take this phone call, certainly since it looks like he's, I've never said these words before, calling from Medellin, Colombia.
Whoa. Is this my buddy Joey?
It's Orlando, right? Oh, okay. Here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Orlando?
What's going on, Uncle Rich? What's happening?
Are you calling in from South America? Is that what you're doing?
I am. You know, the birds are chirping.
Okay.
You know, the coffee's flowing.
Okay.
All is well here.
Okay, very good. Okay, very good. What's on your mind there in Colombia?
What is that?
What's on your mind?
Oh, so football. So we are in perilous waters right now, man. This is like the most important draft of Chris Ballard's career because I don't think his leash. I think he's on the hottest hot seat of any coach or any GM in the league right now. I don't think he can take Anthony Richardson at number three. One, we still gave up 60 sacks last season. We don't have any weapons around him. If you want to consider Michael Pittman Jr. a weapon, okay, cool. But also, Jonathan Taylor's contract's up at the end of this year. Pittman's contract is up at the end of this year. We don't have any weapons. We're like one of the most depleted rosters, period. And here's my thing with Colts football. Here's my thing. We have one Super Bowl, but we've honestly been like the most underachieving franchise in the past 20 years. We'll arguably have 8 Hall of Famers out of that 1999 to 2010 teams.
Mm-hmm.
Manning, Lane, Marvin, Edgerrin, Dwight, Hall of Famer, maybe Robert Mathis and Adam Vinatieri. And then you have coaches like Tony Dungy and yeah. Chris Ballard.
No, I know. I got it. I know that it's something that frustrates you. Hey, look, just a quick question for you. Is there a Colts fan club in Colombia?
I don't think so, man. I think I'm just one of one.
Okay. You could start one.
You know, I think it's just me, but I'm sure there's some Cowboys fans here.
We're everywhere.
But let me ask you this one last thing.
Yeah.
What's more likely? If the Colts take Anthony Richardson in the next 4 years, what's more likely? In the next 4 years, the Colts draft Arch Manning in 4 years, the Jets make a Super Bowl appearance, or Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, revitalizes the University of Miami.
Oh, my goodness. What's more likely? The Colts choose Arch Manning in the next 4 years, or Deion reconstitutes University of Miami? I don't know. Would Miami really go for Prime? That would be unbelievable to bring in a Florida State
guy. Prime go
in there
for Miami?
I think he would.
Oh, how could? Oh, that's disgusting to me.
Why?
A Florida State guy coach in Miami?
Get out of here.
I don't think Prime would do that.
Who cares? Thanks for the call. Interesting stuff right there.
Shout out to Medellin, man.
I was watching some of that Texas Pro Day. You know, Arch didn't exactly light it up.
Well, he said it was. He says it's Ewers' job. Sarkeenian says it's his job.
Well, Ewers looked awesome.
Well, he also shaved off the mullet, and he looks far more corporate America.
Yeah. I don't like corporate Quinn, but.
Corporate Quinn.
Oh, Deion.
I would not want to see that as a Deion and a Florida State fan. I think I'd have to kind of cheer for Miami. I don't want to do that, man. I already got enough teams to root for.
Texas might not throw Arch out there in year one, huh?
That's fine.
No question. He's not playing unless injury.
Okay.
Let him learn for a year. Give him three. Then we fit him for the jacket in, 28?
Yeah,
and then
the
I
Colts
buy my boat in 20?
Why wouldn't Deion 24? Go for Miami if they offer him, you know, an appropriate package? Why wouldn't?
And this is just
because he was a Bobby Bowden guy?
This is just the Florida State
here.
Fan talking.
Come on, now.
That's the reason.
Deion's not going to sit there and go, Florida State had a shot at him. Okay?
I know, that is true. That's a good
All
point,
right?
too.
Florida State could have gotten him. And didn't.
Not true.
Okay, so. Let's just see what he does in Colorado first, and I suspect he will perform. It'll take some time for him to get where he wants to go.
Yeah, like
I would think.
I mean, already hasn't had the season yet.
TCU's his first game. I mean, that is a tough one.
Yeah.
But why wouldn't he go for Miami?
Like I said, that's just me as the Florida State fan, that one.
Got
that's
it. All. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Will Levis is in Indianapolis today.
Still eating bananas the same way I'm
Anthony assuming? Richardson, yeah. Anthony Richardson is all over the map. I believe he's in Tennessee today. He's going to wind up visiting the Ravens, too. I mean, there's a lot of top 30 visits that they're just shoehorning in because why not? What a, you know.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, you know, and certainly you're doing your due diligence if you're Baltimore. What if this kid drops all the way down? I doubt it. I so doubt it. They're sitting at 23. Do they even move up? That would be wild.
No.
That would be wild. I don't even know. And then there's Hendon Hooker. Hendon Hooker's visiting a whole bunch of places.
Now that's the guy.
Because that's the guy that you just sit for a year and see what's going
exactly. on. Exactly. So you do what the Ravens did for Lamar Jackson. You get back into the first round at the bottom there, and you take him. You let him sit until you need him.
But you knock on – I mean, you got some teams at the bottom of the first round that I think would be happy to pop out if their people that the board isn't there. Happy to say you come in. You want Hendon Hooker for a fifth year of eligibility – for your contract, fifth year of your, for a fifth year of contractual control. You got the Jacksonville Jaguars at 25. You got the Giants at 26. You got the Cowboys at 27. You got the Buffalo Bills at 28. You got Cincinnati at 29. Certainly if New Orleans is sitting there at 30 and might want to just roll the dice and figure that Derek Carr is not going to be there for a whole long time. I mean, or they'll trade out. Philadelphia at 31, Kansas City at 32. Somebody wants a fifth year of contractual control of Hendon Hooker, you can come and grab him right there. And then, of course, there's Minnesota at 24. Everyone thinks they're going to grab that kid no matter what. So you want to pop in front of them, there's Baltimore at 23. Chargers at 22. Seattle sitting there at 20. They could draft Hendon Hooker and have Geno Smith do his thing. Or they can go ahead, Seattle, and choose Anthony Richardson at 5 or move up and go get him if they love him so much. Hendon Hooker is in Washington today. Is he hanging out with Magic? 16th overall. You want to use your 16th overall pick on this kid? Houston. You know why they might be trading out of 2? Because they love Hooker. They're sitting there at 12 with the Deshaun Watson pick. They can grab him and say, we'll go with Davis Mills for this year. You know? Or you're Detroit. Do you do something like that? Do you go with Anthony Richardson? Washington, do they choose Hendon Hooker? Or if you're Indianapolis, do you take Will Levis? Do you just pass on it and you go, you're one of those teams that trades back into the end of the first round for Hooker and you go into your first year, you're saying who's going to be your starter? It's my number one on my power rankings list of quarterbacks whose birthday parties I want to attend the most, Gardner Minshew. How do you look against the Dallas Cowboys? With Shane Steichen at the controls. You know? There are so many options right here, and it's all believable. Everything I just said is 1,000% believable. Anybody can... The Raiders are in this mix, sitting there at 7. Do they move up? Do they sit tight? And then the Texans. I mean, this is wild. Again, Adam Schefter first put it in the ether last week. I'm not convinced that the Texans are going to take a quarterback second overall. Albert Breer came on the show a couple days later. I'm like, what do you think? And he's like, Caserio came from New England where they never used a first-round pick on a quarterback. The highest he ever drafted one in New England was Garoppolo, second round. D'Amico Ryans is the new head coach there. He was there in the draft where they went ahead and went. They zigged when everybody thought they were going to zag with Reggie Bush. They went with Mario Williams. And then D'Amico Ryan shows up. And he comes from San Francisco where, you know, choosing someone top five didn't pan out. So, yeah, they might be inclined to go and get Will Anderson second overall or trade out and then use 12 on Hendon Hooker. Hmm. Why not? You might be, that's too high. What do you care? That's what they pick. They'll get in front of everybody. Kid gets better. The question is do you do such a move if you're on the hot seat? I haven't heard that Nick Caceres is on a hot seat, but I guess that's been the talk down there in Houston. Because he, in his press conference today, started it with a soliloquy on that very subject matter and even dropped a nice pop culture reference in there, too. Check it out.
You know, before we take any questions, quite frankly, I'm almost embarrassed that I have to say anything. I mean, honestly, I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio in The Wolf of Wall Street, but I'm not leaving. There's never really been any substantive discussions of the sort. You know, unfortunately, I think this time of year, there's a lot of information and a lot of topics that are discussed. Some are more accurate than others, and I think it transcends multiple landscapes. I'm almost embarrassed that I have to say anything, but I feel like I have an obligation to to make that statement, really try to stay ahead of it. I don't think there's anything else to talk about or to say or any question about it.
Well, he came out and he just wanted to put that to rest.
There you go.
Okay. So then what about the trading the second overall pick? Could you do that?
We've received some calls. Actually, on the number two pick, so I think our job and responsibility is to listen, not rule anything out. And I think whatever the end result is, come Thursday, you know, we'll be prepared to go either way. So if you want to quote me, are we open for business? I'd say we're open to listening. So if you want to change the vocabulary this year a little bit, but we have received a few calls, and again, I think our responsibility is to listen, to try to take the information in, and then just make the right decision.
There you have it. I'm assuming it's Will Anderson. I don't know. Jalen Carter is making visits all over the top 10 market. And if you think he's a game changer and you think he's going to be fine off the field, then you go and take that kid. Everybody had him above Will Anderson on their draft boards before all that craziness happened in Georgia.
Right.
And then he had to leave the combine. But that could just be the agent saying, and Drew Rosenhaus, we're only visiting top 10 teams. So if you think he's going to fall out of the top 10, good luck to you. We're only visiting top 10 teams. It's about controlling the narrative, which, again, Nick Caserio just did in his first comments in a press conference today about the draft. I ain't leaving. I appreciate him cleaning it up, the real transcript from Wolf of Wall Street. Different, but agents will do that sort of thing to set the narrative. Bryce Young just did it today. Tom Pelissero reporting that he's canceling the rest of his pre-draft visits.
Cancel.
I visited the Panthers. I visited the Texans. That's all I need to do. I know who he's telling. I ain't coming. One GM in Houston says, I ain't leaving. He's doing the opposite. I ain't coming. I ain't effing coming.
There you go.
So he's done enough traveling. He's not packing a bag. Next bag he packs is for Kansas City. To hear his name first overall, or he visited two.
First or second.
And everything you just heard Caserio say could be 1,000%. They have looked at C.J. Stroud, not sold. Not sold on him. If everyone's sold on Will Anderson, guess what? You got to come to us to go get him. Or if you want to make sure you're sold on Stroud, you got to come to me to go get him. Because Arizona might be somebody's choice to trade up to. Or this could be completely thrown off on a smokescreen. I don't know why. I mean, they might think that Bryce Young could drop to him too. And then every single plan that you're hearing about we'll trade to goes out the window because they'll take him. Who the heck knows? And this is what I wanted. I told you, I want complete anonymity about the top pick, and I want everything else to be completely in the dark because I want you to tune into NFL Network's coverage a couple of Thursdays. Oh, baby. And then Anthony Richardson, who wants him? Is he going to drop? Is he going to go three? Could he go four? Could he go five? Six? Is he going to drop? The Raiders, would they be all over him? Because he can marinate while Jimmy G cooks. Hanging out at the ranch. Good times.
Hey.
I'm talking about football.
Okay.
So what's your problem? What is your problem?
Well, yeah, where do we start?
All right, we'll take a break. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Francisco Lindor of the Mets joining us shortly. Work in progress, that old pitch clock still. Yeah. Working out the kinks a couple weeks in. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Rich Eisen Show.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
So, pitch clock, everybody. Pitch clock. You don't see it on the broadcast. You see it when you go to a game. So, I'm told it's a different experience. I haven't been physically to a game yet.
I'm going tonight.
Okay. You'll let us know tomorrow if it's different when you're there. My concern, as you know, is that Ohtani-Trout matchup that lit up the Twitterverse and the sports world internationally. To end the World Baseball Classic, every single pitch in that sequence would have violated a pitch clock. And I want to see this thing play out. I want to see this thing being the drama play out. I want to see a game finish up filled with drama without wondering about a pitch clock.
Agreed.
You know what I'm saying? So we asked the commissioner of baseball about it when he came on the show, and he said that it's a work in progress. Here's what Rob Manfred had to say.
The most important point, Rich,
yes.
and I want to make the big point, and I've said this to the players that I've met with, our feet are not in stone with respect to the pitch clock. We want to see how it, we've seen it in spring. We saw it in the minor leagues.
Yep.
We've seen it in spring training. We want to see it in regular season games, particularly in situations that are high leverage. And, I think we will talk about what should happen in those situations. And I think that certainly have the capacity to make adjustments on the fly during the course of the season. And again, I want to emphasize this. Mm-hmm. The core of the pitch clock is going to be the core of the pitch clock. It's these things around the edges to address unique situations or particular situations, maybe is the better word, during a game. We'll continue to, get input from players and talk about them.
So we found a new edge. The commissioner's saying that we're working the edges.
Hmm.
Found a new edge. And an edge of the pitch clock is when a player comes back to an old haunt and is still beloved and gets an ovation. Cody Bellinger, Chicago Cub, in Dodger Stadium Friday night. Former MVP of the National League. Won a World Series with Los Angeles and steps in to the batter's box and the crowd noise builds and builds and builds and there's a huge ovation and he steps out. And guess what happened? He got called for a strike for a pitch clock violation. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Stupid.
Now, apparently, there is a process. I read this in the Los Angeles Times over the weekend. There is a process for Major League Baseball to clear a player for a pitch clock violation in advance under such circumstances. The Dodgers or the Cubs needed to call Major League Baseball and say, hey, Bellinger's playing tonight. Can you tell the umpires if he gets an ovation and he steps out of the box to not pop him for a pitch clock violation? And apparently the commissioner's office has to approve it. Apparently, according to this article, the Yankees did such a thing prior to their opening day game because they knew Judge would get showered with applause his first game being a freshly re-signed Yankee for life coming off of the Yankee season for the ages he had last year. So no pitch clock violation there. But because they didn't approve it, apparently Bellinger got popped. Or maybe the home plate umpire Jim Wolf should have just used the discretion we heard that's apparently available to him, as the commissioner just said, under certain circumstances. But he didn't. As a matter of fact, he popped them for a strike. And all I have to say is this. I understand there's a process, and I understand that some things can get messy as we're instituting something completely new. I get it 100%. But hey, umps, if you don't want to be replaced by robots, don't act like one. All right? If you want to talk about how important you are, and you are, because there's a human element to umpiring and refereeing that would be missed if robots took over, and that you are the human element that is required to keep baseball as great as it is, then don't act like a complete robot. See what's going on, hear what's going on, and just wave your finger to say, keep the clock going, and get them in the batter's box. What the hell happened on Friday night is insane. And what, teams got to call the commissioner's office in advance? Expecting how fans may act or react? Come on.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's simple. You don't want to be replaced by a machine. Don't umpire like one. And then, of course, you know, the Dodgers lose on Sunday. Three called strikes in the ninth inning. Every last one of them outside the strike zone.
None of them in the box.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. Now, so ump a little better. It's a tough job. I get it. But when you see a fan en masse, you see fans en masse do something like that with Cody Bellinger, just live in the moment. Will you please? That extra 15 seconds, we'll make it back.